Welcome back to the show, Navin Bray. Great to have you here. You know, I kind of made this comment earlier, just to give you a glimpse into my mind. As Saturday morning, I was sitting at home, listening on this radio station as we broadcast the Donald Trump news conference about the military operation in Venezuela, of course, the arrest of their de facto president, and then, of course, everything that falls from that. I'm listening like you. I'm absorbing, but I'm also starting now to think about guests. Who do we want to get on the show to talk about it? And we had General Rick Hillier right off the start of the show. General Hillier, Canada's former chief of defense staff, who, of course, has some strong ideas about how military operations like this work. So from that angle, yep, General Hillier, want that. We want the political angle covered, and we will be talking, in fact, tomorrow morning at 8:30 with Premier Scott Moe. Will join us right off the start of the show. But the oil permeated, excuse the pun, through all of this. I mean, how many times did we hear President Trump use the word oil that morning? Oil and energy production is at the heart of this. We know that. I mean, there's lots of ancillary discussions that are happening, but oil, this is big. And is it a big concern for Canada? So right away, I think about Heather Exner-Perot. We've had Heather on our program before. She's a senior fellow, director of energy, natural resources, and environment at McDonnell Laurier Institute in Ottawa. She is a special advisor to the Business Council of Canada and a great guest when we're talking about things like oil production, energy production in our country and the impact of this. And I read some of the social media writings from Heather on social media over the last couple of days, and I'm happy to say we have connected by phone with Heather Exner-Perot today. Heather, thanks for taking the call.
No, thanks, Evan. Thanks for the kind words.
Great to have you here. So when you look at this situation in Venezuela and the United States and probably what is some of the rhetoric around it, I mean, there's the factual information and then there's the buildup that everybody puts to it. What is just your thought, your reaction to what's going on?
Well, I think it's been telegraphed, you know, that the United States was planning something in Venezuela for a couple of weeks. So I've been thinking about it. At heart, I'm a political scientist, and I know it's, you know, I think people have this idea that it's easy to get oil out of the ground and to mine and get these things to global markets and do so reliably and to attract billions of dollars of investment. And I know for a fact that it's not. And so I think I've just been thinking that it's not going to be as easy in Venezuela as anyone might hope it's going to be. Trump has had this idea that, you know, you can go into Greenland or Ukraine or the Arctic or Venezuela and kind of just pick up dollars off of the ground. In reality, and I think people in Saskatchewan know this better than most, resource extraction is very difficult.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more, Heather, because, you know, I think you're on to something here that many of us who are not in the industry, we maybe have a general understanding about what mining looks like and what is needed, but walk us through the situation that exists right now in Venezuela and what is going to be required to get that oil pumping up to the point of now they're talking in the millions of barrels a day?
Yeah, great question. So Venezuela does have very large reserves. They say they have the largest. You know, that was kind of, you know, Hugo Chavez is the one that said that. But regardless, they for sure have large reserves. But having large reserves is not the same as having profitable reserves. And so all that matters for an investor and a customer is how cheaply can you get that barrel to me? What Venezuela has as large reserves is mostly offshore, some onshore, but lots offshore. And it's very heavy oil, which is kind of like we have in the oil sands. And people might appreciate that the oil sands is very upfront, capital intensive, that you have to spend tens of billions, and in our case, over $100 billion to kind of get things running. And then after that upfront capital expense, it's a lot cheaper, and you can kind of do the operational expense is a lot lower. But you have to coax heavy oil out of the ground. It doesn't flow like light crude like it would in Texas or in Saudi Arabia. And that takes, again, more upfront investment. But that's not the hard part in Venezuela, if you ask me, although that is hard. The hard part is this got very poor governance. It's very unstable. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of gangs, and there's a lot of corruption. If oil is only $58 a barrel right now, and there's a lot of palms that have to get greased, a lot of people standing up to get their share of that $58 for every barrel, there isn't going to be anything left for investment.
So can we talk for a second? Let's say Saskatchewan and Venezuela were starting right now to basically set up a mining process for the oil in the oil sands and for the heavy oil that they have in Venezuela. Can you talk about the infrastructure needed? Is it comparable down there? I mean, we need a pipeline typically to get ourselves to either the market south of the border or to the west or east coast. Venezuela is on the coast, but talk a bit about the cost of infrastructure needed to go alongside this.
Yeah, great question. And again, it's going to be more for heavy oil than it is for light oil. So again, the infrastructure coax it out of the ground to begin with. And then all you need to blend it, you need to kind of make it runnier. And so you have to blend some dilutants, we would call, and so it can flow. And that then you need pipelines to get that to it, and then you need pipelines to get it out. And then, of course, you're going to need ports. And because Venezuela is not pipelining to its markets, it's shipping it, you need a lot of very large oil carriers. All of these things cost billions, in some cases tens of billions of dollars, and that's where the business case kind of falls down, that to do Venezuelan oil at scale, which you could, and if, you know, when oil is $80 or $90 a barrel, I think some people will be very interested in it. But to do it now, you're talking about upfront investments that you won't get your return on for years, and we know that the situation in Venezuela is unstable, and we know that they have a tendency to nationalize industry once they are profitable.
Right.
So again, if you're just private capital, if you are backed by Trump or the U.S. administration, there's a lot of places in the world that have oil. Even if they have smaller reserves, they might just be easier or cheaper to get out. Lots of those exist. And I think that's where most investors will still be looking.
Heather Exner-Perot is my guest, Senior Fellow, Director of Energy, Natural Resources and Environment at McDonnell Laurier Institute. You kind of touched on it there, but there is hints now, and of course we don't know how much of this will come to fruition, but hints that the United States government might provide some incentives for U.S. businesses to make that sort of investment in Venezuela. How will that potentially play into this situation?
Yeah, great question. So one thing that's been interesting for me to watch is that there are quite a few different objectives being you know, discussed from the U.S. administration. So Marco Rubio is really, I think, interested in the regime change, in getting out kind of bad, illegitimate socialist dictators. I think J.D. Vance is interested in the narco-terrorism, in stopping the drug flow from enemies. And I think Donald Trump, as you pointed out, is very interested in the oil.
Right.
That seems to be what he's talking about. Now it's become, I think, in the last few days, kind of revealed that there's probably not a lot of investor interest, or that they'd be very hesitant. They need security guarantees, and they need a lot of reassurances before they're going to spend their hard-earned dollars there. And so now we have Trump saying, well, maybe we'll subsidize them. And this is where it gets very bad politically, domestically, I think, because as much as we might, you know, have concerns that this is not good for Canadian producers, it's not good for American producers either. And obviously shale has gotten more expensive. They look to be peaking. They're more expensive than the Canadian oil sands now. And at $58 a barrel, actually, they've been reducing rigs and they've been reducing production, and they probably peak production. And so to think of their own government subsidizing producers in a different country to actually make their business case worse, to drive down the cost of oil, I don't think that will fly domestically in a lot of Republican states who happen to be oil-producing states. So, you know, the fun part, I think, for the United States is day one when you kidnap a dictator. And we've seen, you know, in many different conflicts in the last 20 years that is, every day after that gets worse.
You know, I've seen a lot of timelines talked about in the last couple of days around how long before potentially new life could be breathed into the oil industry in Venezuela. I'm hearing 3 to 5 years, in some cases longer. Here at home, I'm hearing timeline discussions around how long this new pipeline, the MOU was just signed on, from Alberta to the West Coast could take. Has this become a race?
Well, I feel like there's always urgency, and I'm glad that Venezuela has highlighted it, that the average Canadian feels some more urgency. But there's always competition in global oil markets. If it wasn't going to be Venezuela, it's Guyana, or it's Brazil, or it's OPEC, or it's Russia. There's always supply that you have to compete against, and you always want to have better and different markets. And so for me, I feel like a year ago when Trump was first elected, there was some urgency in Canadians. You know, we're shook out of our complacency. I feel like maybe we got comfortable again because the economic consequences weren't dramatic enough for some of us. So the silver lining to me is that this is kind of pushing that discussion again as a higher political priority. It's making it easier for Carney to do it or harder for him to not do it.
Right.
But absolutely, it's business 101. You want to diversify your customer base. We should have done it 10 years ago. The second best time to do it is now. And at least, Alberta's working on the proposal. And they say by July 1st, they'll have it into the major projects office.
Heather Exner-Perot is my guest. Just a couple more questions before we let you go. I am curious to know, we've talked a lot, and in fact, I saw a recent interview you did where you talked about the strength of Canada. You said, look at the cards we have in our hand. We have lots of strengths. We hear constantly from our federal government that countries that are looking to us for energy are also looking to us to have some sort of responsible restriction on greenhouse gas emissions in order for them to do business with us. I can't imagine if they are able to revive the Venezuelan oil industry that it's going to be green friendly. I can't imagine that it will be. Is this a thing, Heather? Are we getting ultimatums from countries saying, yes, we want your oil, but you've got to put a cap on emissions?
There's no premium. So in the markets, no one is paying more. And obviously Venezuela, there won't be more heavy emitting oil in the world than Venezuelan. So yeah, absolutely, if you're an environmentalist, you want to, make sure the oil stands are beating Venezuela oil. But no, there's no premium. But what I think will happen, is I do think reliability of supply for energy is important for some countries. If you're Japan, if you're South Korea, you're reliant on your energy is 90% coming from someone else. And so they've always been very concerned about energy security. Obviously, Europe, since Russia invaded Ukraine, is more concerned about the origins of its energy. And that's why I'm so bullish on Canada, that actually people would rather get their energy from Canada if we can provide it at the same price. Then absolutely, all other things being equal, they would choose it from us.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe, for some of those markets, they like the idea, that we're more responsible. But no one's paying a premium. But I'll tell you, there'll be a hierarchy. Number one, affordability. Number two, reliability. And number three, if you get to that point, sustainability. It hasn't gone that point in global markets yet. But Canada has a lot going for it. I wouldn't say it has anything to do with the emissions intensity. It has to do with the fact that they think they can rely on us, and there's not a lot of places you can rely on these days.
If you got the phone call this afternoon from the Prime Minister, and he's got all the premiers sitting around the table and they're looking to you for advice, what advice would you give them for Canada going forward based on what we're seeing today playing out?
It was two things. One is, stop politicizing these things. I don't think it's in our interest, and I don't think it's global interest, that we make this into a political football in Canada. Just absolutely across the board, let's all agree, we need to develop our energy and resources. It's good for us, and it's good for the world. So number one, this should not be a wedge issue in Canada anymore. We should just build things like they're normal pieces of infrastructure. And number two, it's good for us and it's good for the world if we expand global market share. So everything, we're looking at potash, at uranium, at natural gas, at oil, at grains, anything we're looking at, what can we do to expand global market share? What can we do to make sure we're reaching markets more efficiently? We know that people want it from us. How can we get to them at a competitive price? Because I think they'll buy it if it's a competitive price.
Always appreciate our chats. Heather, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Take care.
Heather Exner-Perot is with the McDonald Laurier Institute. Just a great wealth of knowledge and a great resource to talk about things like oil, like gas, energy production. She is the Senior Fellow and Director of Energy, Natural Resources, and Environment at McDonald Laurier Institute, and makes some great sense. I'm glad we were able to connect with her today on the show. I mentioned this earlier. Don't forget, we've got Premier Scott Moe tomorrow morning at 8:30. And we started the show off today with General Rick Hillier, former Canadian Chief of the Defense Staff. He will we'll revisit that conversation with General Hillier coming up just after 12 o'clock today here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.